Aaron and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com, live from Bridgestone Arena, where the Preds are taking on the Arizona Coyotes tonight at 7 o'clock. Pregame at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, Floyd, we are in day number 4 of our Titans coaching search.
Ooh.
Ian, I want you to stay on top of me for how many days we go into the coaching search so I don't lose count. But as of right now, we are at day number 4. And it will be quite a while until the Titans put their pads on. But day number 4 of the coaching search. By the way, the breaking news we had at the top of the show, Mike Vrabel has interviewed with the Titans today. They completed that earlier today, the defensive coordinator of the Texans. So Vrabel is a New England guy, played in New England, then he went on Bill O'Brien's staff where he coached under Romeo Crennel, and now he's the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, which is kind of the Texas version, or they are trying to be, of the New England Patriots. Now, the things that they don't have that the Patriots do have, they don't have the same owner, and they don't have Bill Belichick picking the players. But they have a New England coach, they have a bunch of New England coaches. Vrabel is a New England guy. Another guy, McDaniels, who has been talked about for the job. Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots, is a New England guy. And there's a sense that John Robinson might want this to be New England South. Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN was on 3D yesterday, and this is what Tim said.
You know, whether it was the Josh McDaniels rumors or the fact that, you know, Mike Vrabel's, you know, now rumored to, or not rumored, but he's going to interview for the job, that, you know, John Robinson wants kind of a New England type setup here. And that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's what he's comfortable with. And I think it makes even more sense when you look at how the game against New England went.
So you heard that from Tim about wanting New England. Floyd, you've been in New England. Does John Robinson want New England here? And is it possible for him to build New England here if he gets a New England coach?
No, it's not. I mean, it's impossible because the coach's name won't be Bill. But I think, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, there are things there that are done better than anyplace else. And I think every person that's been through that and leaves will find out quickly what some of those things are, and they will want some of those things to be a part of their program. I think that's true with probably every experience you have throughout the league. If you've been with 5 different teams, you're going to take a little bit from all of those teams. Well, if you're with a team that's arguably the best franchise ever, you're going to take more from that franchise than you are from an 0-16 team. And so I think all of these guys will have part of that in their program. The thing that is two things always help with talking to these New England guys. One, he knows them all, easy to talk to. And the second thing is when they come in here, if they have been both at New England, they will have a baseline knowledge that will be the same. Their verbiage will be the same when they use terms. And when they're talking about players and they're talking about needs and they're talking about all of those things, they'll be talking the same language. When you bring in somebody that has not been a part of that and you want to say you're John Robinson, you want to keep part of that, well, you've got to teach them what you're talking about. And that takes time and effort and, you know, slows the process down. So it actually speeds things up a little bit if you can bring somebody in that's at least familiar with what you're talking about.
They can bring in a New England guy, but he's got to be a great coach. You know, and I'm not saying that all the New England guys aren't great coaches, but like Charlie Weiss, I think, is a great coach when he's working for Belichick and with Brady. Like, I think Brady's the perfect quarterback for Charlie Weiss. Charlie Weiss goes to Notre Dame. He don't have Brady. He got Brady Quinn, not Tom Brady. Different. And he actually won with Brady Quinn, but then when he didn't have Brady Quinn, he was awful. I feel like Romeo Crennel has had some really good defenses as a coordinator. When Romeo was with the Chiefs with Scott Pioli and they tried the New England thing there, it didn't work out because Matt Castle was their quarterback and their teams just weren't good enough. So I guess where I sit, I mean, I think it's impossible to recreate New England. The truth is, John's got to create Tennessee. you know, this has to be Tennessee. And maybe he is the one guy that can do it. Like Kirby Smart, I think, has done a good job of turning Georgia into the Alabama of the SEC East. And I don't know what makes Kirby, you know, special from the other Nick Saban assistants who haven't been really able to do that. I know you can say Jimbo won a title at Florida State, but he didn't win it like Saban style. But Kirby has built a Saban team at Georgia. Maybe John can do that here. It hasn't worked out in Kansas City where they tried it. It really hasn't worked out with the Texans where they've tried it. So I don't know what would make Tennessee different than those. It hasn't worked in Tampa, and it hasn't worked in Detroit yet. So I don't know. I don't know if it's possible to be the next New England.
Well, no.
Without Brady especially.
Yeah, you don't have the head coach. You don't have the quarterback. But I don't think – I mean, my gut feeling is John is not necessarily trying to make this New England. But like I said, I think there are aspects of the program that you want integrated into whatever it is you're doing. And that's going to make it, I mean, it's just a better system of what, you know, some things are a lot better. Other things aren't as good. Or they may be equal to what they do at San Diego or, I'm sorry, L.A. or San Francisco or wherever. But I think the biggest problem these assistants have, in my opinion, when they leave New England is they try to create another New England. And they don't have Bill Belichick. And because you don't have Bill, you can't create that. You can make every single thing exactly the way they do it in New England. But if you don't have Bill, it's not going
to
work.
Well, if that's the case, then no, you don't want John to try to create the next New England because you want John to try to create Tennessee.
Right.
But then again, I go back to the whole Kirby Smart thing. Kirby's the one guy who has basically been able to take the Nick Saban system and apply it somewhere else and be successful doing it. Because, I mean, I know that Georgia, for some reason, Kirby and Nick has never been able to get the kind of quarterbacks Kirby's getting. But Kirby got a 5-star the first year. Kirby got a 5-star the second year. Kirby's got a 5-star the third year, all in recruiting at quarterback. Kirby's done a great job there. But Jake Fromm is playing like A.J. McCarron. You know, he's playing right now the game manager role. Kirby has made Georgia an Alabama. Why was Kirby able to do that? And why in the NFL can no one do that to New England? Like, everybody tried to do it. Everyone that's left Saban's staff in college, they've tried to do it. They can't do it. At the end, it's because they're not Saban. Except Kirby was the one guy who can leave Saban and go do that. Vol fans, they've got to pray that Pruitt can go build, you know, the Tennessee version of Alabama. And I'm wondering, why can't John be the one guy that builds the New England version of Tennessee or the Tennessee version of New England?
Because we don't have Bill.
And Brady.
And Brady, yes.
See, the thing that gets me.
But I think there are, I mean, the point, the good part of that is there are several elements of what they do there that John does now. I know. And that's why if you bring in a New England guy and you sit down in a meeting and you start talking about a specific player or specific position and you start throwing terms around, I mean, those guys won't skip a beat. You know, if it's somebody that hasn't been part of the program and you say, okay, I'm going to give him this kind of grade and this kind of a special teams grade, and, well, everybody else that hasn't been in New England is going, well, what does that mean? You know, what is that? Is that good, bad? What is that? And you go through the whole process of explaining it. Well, with all the New England guys, they just keep trucking.
Okay, well, you spent 30 years in the league before you got to New England. How hard was it for you to get caught up on the New England system?
Well, I mean, it wasn't hard because I'd been around so many different systems, but it is different. I mean, it's not, they just do things differently there. It's more in depth. It's more important. It's better thought out. It's all of the things that you could do if you were doing this job for 30 years. Imagine how much better you would be in the 29th and 30th year than you are now, simply because you would know everything there is to know about radio. You know, if something didn't work, you could walk over and plug this in and plug that in, and we're off and running. And that's the difference. You know, if you've been in a place, had the opportunity to do something longer, and it's worked and it gets better and you continue to evolve with it, it just gets better and better and better. For all these guys, all these head coaches that have a head coaching job for 3 years, I mean, what can they, you know, they're barely getting their head above water and getting their fire.
615-737-1025. That's the question we're going with this hour. Is it good for the Titans? And do you think John Robinson can make the Titans New England? My official answer on this, and the number 615-737-1025, my official take on that is he can't do it, but I don't think he's going to try. I think he's going to try to do his own thing. 615-737-1025. Hey, business owners, are you proud of what you wear? Are you proud of what your employees are wearing? You're thinking, what are you talking about, Jared? I am, because I wear Authentically American. That's right, business owners, Authentically American. Authentically American is a veteran-owned company passionate about creating U.S. jobs and making the best branded apparel you can find, made in the USA. If you are a business owner, you want that high-quality product that is made here in America, and your employees will be proud to wear, and you will be proud of them wearing, why not outfit them with Authentically American? High-quality tees, polos, hats, jackets, Oxford, socks, vests, and more, made where we play in the USA. Whether you have 5 employees or you are a Fortune 500 company, Authentically American has you covered. They have low to no minimums so the small business owner can support. That's right, made in the USA. When you order, Authentically American will donate 10% of all sales to veteran charities and our American heroes. Authentically American is so American that it's authenticallyamerican.us. That's right, business owners. Or if you run the marketing department and you're the one that buys all the jackets and the shirts and the company apparel, Authentically American. Support USA. Authentically American. AuthenticallyAmerican.us. Once again, that is AuthenticallyAmerican.us. If you have a Made in America need, contact Authentically American today at AuthenticallyAmerican.us. It's Jared and the GM, live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Nationally, everyone thought Josh McDaniels was getting this job. And then when the Titans made the playoffs, what happened was that these teams that had bye weeks or were out of it could go ahead and, the guys that had bye weeks could go interview. And the openings that were out there, so whether it was the Giants and Detroit and the Colts and all these places, they could start interviewing. The Titans couldn't. And so I think what happened is Josh McDaniels got pretty far down the road with both the Giants and the Colts before there was ever an opening. I mean, that's what I think happened.
Tim Hasselbeck yesterday on 3D. So do we think McDaniels to the Colts is a done deal? Jerry and the GM live out of Bridgestone Arena. I'm not ready to say. I mean, they're not married yet.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't see anything to make me think it's a done deal other than they're talking about it.
Other than defensive coordinator's wife changing her Facebook picture to have a Colts logo in it?
Yeah, I don't. I didn't see that. So, I mean, that doesn't. But anyway, I don't. Was that on Twitter or something? I missed it.
Well, I guess it was getting around the internet. The guy who supposedly would be the Colts defensive coordinator, I think it's like Matt Eberflusser or so, I don't know, whatever. I can't pronounce the guy's name. But I guess his wife put up a picture, changed their picture. Matt Eberflus, who I guess will be the defensive coordinator of the Colts. He's on the Cowboys staff right now, or he was the Cowboys linebackers coach. Matt Eberflus would be the defensive coordinator, supposedly, under Josh McDaniels, and Eberflus's wife put up a picture. Kelly Amidi Eberflus put up a picture of them with a Colts logo on it. So people are saying because of that, that's, again, I don't think Josh gives a you know what about what the wife of a presumptive defensive coordinator is going to do. To me, until they're married, they ain't married. And they ain't married.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, this thing could be going in so many different directions that we haven't even talked about that, you know, you just don't know. I mean, that's kind of the bottom line. I mean, yeah, I mean, for all we know, if in fact all the rumors were true 2 or 3 weeks ago when they were talking about, well, if Mike doesn't win this, he's going to get fired. If all that's true, I mean, J-Rob could have been interviewing then.
Mm-hmm. Well, not interviewing, but definitely talking.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could. I mean, there's just a million things that could have and could be going on that we just don't know about.
By my count, there are 7 candidates that are still coaching right now. And I know that we can link some to some and whatever.
Oh,
but until
teams?
The deal's done, yeah. Okay. Matt Patricia, Josh McDaniels, Brian Flores, the linebackers coach, all with the Patriots. Then there's Pat Shurmur with the Vikings, Jim Schwartz, Frank Reich, John DeFilippo with the Eagles. 7. So there's 7 guys that are supposedly candidates for all these openings that are still coaching. I mean, Brian Flores might get the Arizona Cardinals job, but there's no guarantee. And just like there's no guarantee for Brian Flores to get that job, there's no guarantee that McDaniels will take the Colts job if he's offered the Titans job the day after the Super Bowl. I mean, if let's say the Patriots win the Super Bowl, that night, John Robinson might call Josh McDaniels and say, would you be interested? And then McDaniels might go to the Colts and say, hey, guys, I know you want me, but Tennessee's calling. And if the Colts want him bad enough, the Colts aren't going to yank their offer away just because he wants to check out, kick the tires on Tennessee. So to me, I mean, it's like college football. It's not done. It's like recruiting in college football. You might be committed, maybe, but until you're at that school, you ain't at that school.
Sign that, waive that letter of intent. If you don't do that, then we're still up in the air.
I mean, let's just put yourself in the position of Chris Ballard with the Colts. If you felt pretty good that you had McDaniels, but you knew you couldn't have him for 2 more weeks, and you knew Tennessee was out there and you knew Tennessee had a connection to him, you'd at least have to be a little nervous, right? If you were Chris Ballard of the Colts?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's from that standpoint, we don't even know about these other jobs. I mean, he's been rumored to interview for about every single job.
Right.
And you don't know. I'm not sure that we know exactly who he's interviewed with and who he hasn't.
I mean, the insiders like to tell you who people are leaning towards or something, but they don't know.
No.
I mean, they don't know. McDaniels is not going to Ian Rappaport and telling him what he thinks. Now, it could be the Colts that are going to Ian Rappaport and say, oh, no, we've got McDaniels. He's our guy. Or the Giants and Shurmur, or the Lions and Patricia. Although, the Lions and Patricia does seem pretty done dealish. I mean, that seems pretty to the point. But whatever. I mean, it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line with all those deals, the thing you don't know, was this job wasn't open when they were going through all that. And so even if they sat down and, you know, had a moment with these other teams and thought, you know, okay, hey, this looks like a pretty good job. I kind of like this. Well, all of a sudden Tennessee opens up and maybe that completely changes your mind.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe it doesn't at all, but maybe it does. And if it does, especially if you're one of these New England guys and you want to be with another New England guy for whatever reason. And a guy just texted me, a buddy of mine, and said, you know, we need probably the one franchise that has more New England guys in it than any franchise in the league is Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. We didn't think
Atlanta's
about that.
Atlanta's got a
Thomas
whole.
Thomas Dimitrov and Scott
got a
Pioli.
Whole slew of guys that were New England guys that are now Atlanta guys, you know, whatever that means.
I mean, here the New England teams right now, Atlanta is a New England team, Detroit is a New England team, Houston is a New England team, Tampa Bay is a New England team. Who else is a New England team? I think that's about it.
Yeah, I definitely
Kansas City tried their hand at being a New England team with Pioli and Romeo Crennel, and they tried that. Cleveland had Romeo at one point. When Eric Mangini was going around, it was kind of a New England team. But that, generally speaking, right now, there are 5 franchises in the NFL outside of New England that are New England teams. Atlanta, Detroit, Houston, Tampa Bay, and Tennessee. And then the question is, does Indy join that group if they get Josh McDaniels? I don't know the answer. I mean, my thing is this. You know, I heard somebody say, well, Chris Ballard is a very well-respected personnel guy in the NFL, and people love Chris Ballard, and they – I think John Robinson, just from the sense that I get, is probably more respected as a personnel guy than Chris Ballard. I don't know where all the – and I know Ballard's respected, but if Ballard was so respected in Kansas City, wouldn't they have hired him before letting John Dorsey go?
Well, and it's the same thing that we talked about with head coaches is true with guys that become GMs. I mean, until you're the one that says, okay, this is the guy we're going to draft, or this is the guy we're going to cut, or this is the guy we're going to re-sign, or this is the guy that's, you know, whatever, you've never made a decision like that. And not only are these very public decisions, but very, very often they're very expensive decisions. And if your owner is, you know, as most owners are, into all that, you don't make a lot of mistakes with those real, real expensive guys and keep your job. You know, so.
I think of it now, like, to me, it's a total crapshoot. I mean, it is legitimately, I can't tell you about these guys, the Frank Reichs, because I don't know the Frank Reichs. You know what I mean?
My only experience is awful.
Him coming into the playoff game and beating
Yeah, I don't like him. I don't
him
even know.
Him as a quarterback getting in there. Who was he? He was backing up Jim Kelly, right?
Yeah.
Jim Kelly goes down. You got to be feeling great about yourself when Jim Kelly goes down. And then all of a sudden Frank Reich comes in and the Houston Oilers are packing up and going home. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. We are where we are, and there's no going back. And I have moved on from Mike Mularkey, Floyd. I have. But I wonder, in 6 months to a year, how both sides will feel about this. Because you know how whenever there's a divorce, there's always a winner and a loser. And we'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM are live today out at Bridgestone Arena, where once again, the Preds take on Arizona tonight. And the Honky Tonk Hat Trick is back, brought to you by Bud Light. Join Chase McCabe from 5 to 6:30 at Tootsie's prior to the Predator Showdown with Arizona. While you're there, register for a pair of tickets to tonight's game and passes to the Bud Light Zone, or you may win a VIP hockey experience. Be sure to stop by Tootsie's, Rippies, and Honky Tonk Central before Predators weekday home games for specials on Bud Light. Jared and the GM live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
With a lot of these guys, even with Sean McVay before he went out to the Rams, there was no evidence to say that he would do what he did. You right. were making a bet, an educated guess that he's going to do what he did, but there's always a leap of faith. And right now there are some things that are lined up in Tennessee that would say, okay, this makes sense, but you're right, it's not a given.
That was Lewis Riddick on ESPN, and the big word he said, or the big phrase he had right there, in my mind, was leap of faith. And at some point, there's a leap of faith in all of this, right, Floyd?
Right.
Jared and the GM broadcasting live out at Bridgestone Arena, where the Preds play tonight. The Titans have interviewed Mike Vrabel. So take Mike Vrabel, for example. That's a leap of faith if the Titans were to hire him. Guy's been a coordinator for 1 year. He is a Super Bowl caliber coach, or a Super Bowl winning player. And, you know, people say he's got all kinds of potential from the Belichick tree, all of those things. But at the same time, there's still at least a little bit of a question as to whether or not that guy could be the next great Titans coach. The reason I bring this up, Joe Rexroad wrote a column in the Tennessean, and I mean, I'm not quoting from it, but I guess to paraphrase Joe's column, it was kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, with the Mularkey Titan situation, Titan fans are fired up because they think they're going to go find the next great coach, right?
Absolutely.
And if you're the Titans, you do wonder if you can go find the great coach that can take you further than Mike took you and maybe be the first coach to win this organization a Super Bowl. And if you're Mike, you got to be disappointed about being let go, but at least proud of the fact that you held your ground and you weren't going to be told what to do, right?
I guess, yes.
In 6 months to a year, what are the odds that both sides wish that they had taken the time and talked it through and thought about it? And basically, what are the chances that both sides end up regretting this? I mean, that to me, and to paraphrase Joe's column, I think Joe's spot on. I think there's a legitimate chance that in 6 months to a year, the Titans are 8-8 out of the playoffs, and we're saying, well, Mike Mularkey was 9-7 both years, and Mike Mularkey is going to be the tight ends coach of the Miami Dolphins, and wishing that he was still the head coach of an NFL football team.
And I think that will be the biggest regret. Not taking sides, but, I mean, you were a head coach, and you had one of 32 jobs in the world, and at least from what I understand, chose to leave it. Now, you know, when you're laying in bed at night, you got to think, well, why did I do that again? Let me think about that. And not once, twice. Didn't you do the same thing in Buffalo?
Yep.
Well, I mean, how can you, you know, you have to start thinking, wait a minute. Did I really want that job? You know, I mean, it's because they're hard to get. And I think for certain, he's probably done. So.
Well, unless he gets the offensive coordinator job at Cleveland and they fire Hugh Jackson in the middle of the year and then John Dorsey makes him the coach and maybe he's got a shot. But yeah. I'm with you. I mean, I ultimately think that in the long run, the changes that needed to be made, Mike was not willing to make. But change overall may not be the best thing for the organization. And they may take a step back. I mean, if Mike Vrabel or Frank Reich or all these guys, Matt LaFleur, all these guys that have never been coaches before, if they come in here and they have to learn how to be a head coach and it takes some time and they can't learn on the fly and you go 6-10 next year, I think a lot of you that don't like Mike Mularkey or are glad that Mike Mularkey's gone, I think you guys are going to miss Mike Mularkey.
Sure.
I think you're going to say, you know what? Mike Mularkey did some boneheaded stuff and it really ticked me off how many dumb bubble screens they threw to Harry Douglas. But I will say this, they were 9-7 and in the playoffs. That's if you're 5-11. If you're Mike and you never get another opportunity again, I mean, was it worth it? Like, that's the question that I think nobody's asked, because maybe people don't care as much as who the next coach is. Like, who will be the next coach is the big question everybody wants to know, right? Like, Mike's old news, because the new news is who the next coach is.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, don't you have to think to yourself, Mike kind of screwed up? I mean, Mike really screwed up?
Well, I mean, again, it's that'll be up to Mike. But, I mean, I would be shocked if, you know, you're not, like I said before, laying in bed at midnight some night thinking to yourself, what happened there? Why? How did that all occur, and why, and was that my fault, whose fault? You know, I mean, there has to be a lot of, I know when I got fired as GM, I mean, I did, you know, you're laying in bed and you're wondering, geez, you know, what happened? You know, I shouldn't have done this, I shouldn't have done that.
You should have fired Jeff Fisher.
I mean, there's, you know, you go through hundreds of things trying to analyze, you know, well, geez, exactly how did that happen? And I think that's probably true with everybody that's been in that situation.
Back to what I said, you don't need to analyze 100 things, Floyd. You should have fired Jeff Fisher. If you fired Jeff Fisher, you ain't in that problem. And it just, I mean, the thing that gets me is it's twofold. I've got two questions, and I don't know the answer to them. The first question is, you know, Mike was really adamant about picking the staff. I remember when they hired Mike, and Mike and Steve Underwood and John Robinson sat there. It was kind of, at least, and I haven't gone back and listened to the press conference, but I felt like it was kind of Mike's thing that Mike gets to pick the coaching staff and John gets to pick the roster. That at the end of the day, was what this organization had decided. Mike picks the staff, John picks the roster. So if you're Mike and that's what you pick is the staff, and now John's coming to you and telling you what to do with the staff, and you say, no, I picked the staff, I can see where that would upset Mike. Except that I don't know how normal that is in the NFL for a general manager to want to switch out the assistant coaches. I don't know if that's normal or not. I don't know if that is John kind of overstepping his boundary a little bit to tell Mike what to do, or if that's just what happens in the NFL that the GM tells the coach what to do. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, anybody that your boss can and come down at any point in time and say, I know, you know, this is under your job responsibilities, but this is what we need to do. And, you know, you smile and nod. You may not like it, but I mean,
even if they promised you on the front end that they wouldn't do it.
Sure. I mean, what are you going to do?
But if you if Mike was hired and it was and you were the GM and they were like, "Floyd, you don't have any control over the staff. That's Mike's staff, but you're the GM." And you thought Terry or Steve Hoffman or whoever was the problem, you would not have a problem saying, "Mike, you got to make a move with Terry."
No, if I thought he was dragging everything down, mm-hmm. No. If I thought he was the reason that, you know, whatever, Marcus wasn't improving or whatever the reason you thought was, then I think and he could have, you know. I mean, there was more to it than that, obviously, because if he would have said no, then, you know, Amy would have had to make a decision. So I guess Amy did make a decision, and, you know, we're looking for a new coach. So, I mean, that's not what you want to have happen. But, I mean, I don't – that's like we were talking before about this offense. I mean, I don't know how you can look at this offense and be happy about what happened.
Well, you know, I wasn't happy about it.
I mean, when you compare to last year, what we saw, and you think to yourself, okay, we're going to be a little bit better than this. How much better? I'm not sure. But we'll be a little bit better than this. And I know there are injuries, and I know all of those things are factors. And I understand that. But, I mean, it's hard to look at it and be happy.
But that same staff did have the 11th best offense in the NFL in 2016.
That's what I'm saying.
When DeMarco Murray was healthy.
And I think that's what, you know, people looked at that 2016. It's just like we were talking yesterday.
Right, but no, because DeMarco played. Because if DeMarco had torn his ACL the first week of the season and was out for the year, then we would have looked back on it and said, well, DeMarco's hurt. But because DeMarco played, even though DeMarco was hurt, we don't give the coaching staff the benefit of the doubt. Even though DeMarco was not DeMarco anymore. Does that make any sense?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So like, we
I'm
don't – like take Minnesota last year, right? Minnesota's offense last year was garbage because Teddy Bridgewater got hurt in training camp, and then Adrian Peterson got hurt the first week of the year. And Minnesota was like 6-10 or whatever last year, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. So Minnesota was bad last year. And yet we gave Minnesota a huge benefit of the doubt because Bridgewater got hurt and Peterson got hurt. And even though that defense was nasty with Mike Zimmer, the Vikings just weren't good enough, even though they traded for Sam Bradford. They just weren't good enough offensively without Bridgewater and Peterson, their two most important players on offense. And so nobody said they need to fire Mike Zimmer. Nobody felt that way. I think because DeMarco played, we never gave this offensive staff credit for DeMarco's injury, for the fact that DeMarco gave you exactly half of his production from last year when he was the team MVP, maybe for the whole team, but definitely on offense, and was the third leading rusher in the NFL. We never looked at it and said, you know what? The biggest reason this offense is not as good as we're used to them being is because DeMarco is hurt, because DeMarco played. So it's like we never gave him the pass for DeMarco's injury when we would have given them the pass if DeMarco had been out of the games for the whole season.
Right. I mean, to me, it wasn't – see, it all goes back to the quarterback. I mean, the quarterback just couldn't – you couldn't look at what he was doing and be happy. You couldn't look at who he was throwing the ball to. You couldn't look at how he was handling the huddle. You couldn't look at
any of those kinds of things. I mean, wouldn't people be happy with how Dak played last year when Zeke was there? And people be really upset with how Dak played
this year?
Zeke wasn't there?
Yeah.
Well, then you're happy with how Marcus played when DeMarco was doing his thing.
Right.
And then you're not happy with Marcus when he's hurt and DeMarco's not doing his thing.
Right. I mean, DeMarco was there, and maybe that gets back to your first argument.
Right.
But I think people were saying, I mean, in people's minds, rightly or wrongly, now we may look at it and realize that it was absolutely wrong. They were looking at DeMarco and Derrick Henry and saying, okay, they will make up for any shortcomings that either one has because they're both so good. And I think what we found out is after DeMarco left, we know now why Mike was so in love with DeMarco.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because when
it wasn't about hurting DeMarco's feelings. It was about needing DeMarco out.
Yeah, and we look at it now and we go, aha, you know, maybe they were stubborn about DeMarco because they knew.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Okay, clear the board. We got to take a Titans breather. Preds tonight. Second half of the season already started. How do we feel about the second half? The first half was great. How do we feel about the second half season with the Preds? We'll get to that next. Jared and the GM, we are live from Bridgestone Arena right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We've got a lot of players that are versatile up front, and I think that really helps when we do have some injuries. We're able to sustain those injuries. I thought Sissons and Yarncroc, who moved up the lineup, I thought they played a terrific game. And especially even more when Johansson went out. Those guys were even counted on more. Kevin came up with the big goal, and that's what you need is guys chipping in.
That was Peter Laviolette. Predators tonight against Arizona right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, live out of Bridgestone Arena. Jared and the GM. So a quick little Predators breather, and then we'll get back to the Titans coaching search. But, I mean, the Predators now, they're over halfway through the season. They just had their week off. They won the other night against Vegas. They've won two in a row. They're feeling pretty good. 1 point behind Winnipeg in the Central Division, but they've got three games in hand. So you feel pretty good about that. So the second half of the season is really starting to kick off now. So I guess I ask you, Floyd, I know there's some injuries to discuss, but when you think of second half of the season for the Predators, what do you think?
Just get me to the playoffs, baby.
I mean, I'm with you.
That's all I want.
I'm with you. I look at this year. I look at this like I look at the second half of the season like a warm-up for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they – I mean – obviously, they had a great first half of the season, and I don't think there's any doubt but that we expect them to have a great second half of the season. Now, where do you want to finish? Who do you want to finish ahead of and behind of? And I don't know any of that. You know, I think that'll all play itself out.
Well,
but,
I mean, you'd like to finish ahead of everybody.
Yeah, ideally. I think they're in great position, and I think that if you can be this good with, and I know we haven't had a ton of injuries, but the injuries we have had have been pretty significant. I mean, they're not, you know, they're household names. And so, for them to be playing the way they are with some of that, I think you really have to be excited about what's going to happen in the second half.
Well, especially with the, you know, what they did with Ellis is how I kind of want them to treat every injury the rest of the way. You know, with Ellis, it was like, just come back when you're ready. So, Ryan Ellis, you missed the first half of the season. Okay, just come back when you're ready. Philip Forsberg, you've still got a month to go or whatever. Just come back when you're ready. I don't know how long Victor Arvidsson's going to be hurt. Come back when you're ready. I agree with you. I mean, I'm not holding the Preds accountable to have home ice throughout the playoffs. Now, they're in a position because they've got 58 points. So, a win today, like if they were to win tonight, they would have 60 points, which 60 points would make them the third-best team in the NHL, the second-best team in the Western Conference, which would essentially get you home ice throughout unless you were to get to Vegas in the conference final. And with that being said, if that's where you end up, cool. Yeah. Fine by me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if
can't complain there.
You'd get the first two rounds at home. Unless you play Tampa in the Stanley Cup final, you'd be at home. As long as you're rocking and rolling when the playoffs start, that's all I care about now. I mean, the truth is, and I'm not here to minimize the regular season, because if you're a team right now that's on the cusp of a playoff spot, if you're Dallas, for example, who's got 55 points and a good three-week period can make you feel really good about yourself, then the regular season means everything. But right now, the Preds need to just keep winning to keep the points and keep rolling with it and keep doing their thing. But I'm not watching the play on the ice and holding it to a Stanley Cup caliber level right now. I just need to know. What I really need to know is that when it's time for the playoffs, that those two goalies are ready to rock and roll, especially Pekka. Because
We figured that much out last year, right?
I mean, well, remember when we talked to Crispy and the Preds couldn't lose a game? And this was like a month ago. We had Crispy on the show, and we were talking to Crispy, and we asked Crispy, you know, what he thought of the team. And Crispy was kind of, you know, I was jumping up and down about this team's playing like a Stanley Cup champion, and Crispy was kind of, you know, down on the forwards a little bit, down on the defense a little bit, and then you asked him what the biggest reason why they were being so good or why they were so successful, and he pointed to the goaltender. I mean, the reason why the Predators got where they got last year was because of the goaltender. They won that Game 6 against Anaheim with all those guys out of the lineup, with Fisher out of the lineup and Johansson out of the lineup and all those guys, because Pekka stopped like 40-something shots. UC Saros against Vegas, the best team in the Western Conference, UC Saros stopped like 43 shots the other night. Like, that's why they won the game. Mm-hmm. So I am just make sure for this second half of the season, get the Forsbergs healthy, get the Ellis's healthy, get those guys that have had some injuries, make sure everybody's got plenty of rest, and go take care of business in the playoffs. Just be ready for the playoffs. That's all I'm thinking about.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're preventing themselves from thinking much about it now. I mean, they're just trying to work their way to, you know, stay in as consistent as they have been. And, you know, you don't need outstanding nights. You don't need rotten nights. Just keep chopping wood. You know, the old saying goes. And as it gets closer and closer, things will change. We'll see a different attitude.
Preds have 58 points there in second place in the Central Division. Montreal, Shea Weber's hurt. They're in sixth place with 42 points.
Wow.
I mean, Marc Bergevin, the general manager in Montreal. We always wonder, you know, winning the trade or something like that. I'm pretty happy with PK Subban. I don't know how Montreal feels right now without him being as far down the totem pole as they are. And then, of course, we kind of touched on this the other day. Chicago is in last place right now in the Central Division. Chicago. Now, here's the thing, right? Chicago's got 50 points. So what happens if Chicago wins 11 in a row? Then they're right back in the discussion of, now that's a lot to ask to win 11 in a row.
That's what they're planning, though.
Well, that's
whatever.
If you want to do it, that's what you got to do. But to answer the question, as far as I'm concerned with the Predators, just be ready to rock and roll when it's time to play in the playoffs, because this team is built for the playoffs. This town, I think, is anticipating another exciting playoffs. And the one thing I would say is enjoy the fun parts of the season that you're going through right now, because when you get to the playoffs, just as exciting as last year was, it can be over like that if you have a bad week or a bad 2 weeks, or you find yourself down 3-1 in a playoff series and all of a sudden you can't make any more mistakes if you want to win. So just enjoy it now, but know that it's getting everything ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing's going to change because you're going from the hunter to the hunted.
Get that home ice. Get that home ice. Jared the GM broadcasting live out of Bridgestone Arena, Preds in Arizona tonight. Considering that Arizona is the worst team in the league, I would say that they probably need to go ahead and get 2 points in tonight's game. They probably do need to win. Crispy will join us later here on the show. Jared the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game, your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champion National Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter to keep up with everything going on in Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game. Instagram at The Game Nashville. Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. I'm on Twitter at Jared Stillman. Instagram at The Jared Stillman. Coming up next here on Jared and the GM, as we have a loaded show from Bridgestone Arena, there's a lot of names the Titans are reportedly talking to. A lot of big names. But I got one big question about John Robinson. If he was going to fire the successful coach, shouldn't he know who he's already going to hire? We'll get to that next. It's Jared the GM live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.